follow-up lesson to Ben's last week. He mentioned, I think in both of his lessons, mentioned that much of what he taught, I've taught before. So maybe that's why in the middle of his lesson last week, I put together this one. So I told my daughter afterwards, like, oh yeah, I had a bunch of thoughts and I kind of had a bunch of passages I was thinking about in terms of preaching a message. Because he urged us, if you don't remember, Ben has urged all of us to take to heart the challenges and the obligations to become teachers of the Word, not to simply be followers and listeners, but to be doers and to take it in and proclaim it and teach it to others. And since he made that point that all of us should do that, and he talked about where some places you can start in that process, I asked the question, what message will you preach? And for every one of us to consider, what will be the message you would preach when you have the opportunity to proclaim one? And so kind of from the passage there in Acts, I think we have some training going on. We good? Okay. So in Acts 8:4, the verse that Ben had used as well, says, now those who were scattered went about preaching the word. Now the term preaching, we talk about preaching and teaching like they're just all exactly the same thing. They're really not the same thing. Teaching is when you can teach while preaching, but sometimes teaching is done in a lot of different ways. There's a lot of different methods to teaching, but preaching means kind of a singular thing, and it means to proclaim something. It's you saying something, okay? You are, and yell it, you could be out on a corner and you could yell it to everybody who goes by. You know, you see people with a sign that are going by, you know, in some corner, and you kind of hold up signs. They're proclaiming something, aren't they? Do you listen most of the time? Probably not. What if somebody was out there, you know, in downtown Boise on a corner yelling, and everybody goes by, some message? They would be preaching. And so preaching is simply you getting a message out, you proclaiming it, you making it public in some way, okay? And teaching, though, is actually you with others who are paying attention, trying to help them learn and understand something. You can do that through a preaching style, you know, lectures. You know, if you go to college or even in high school sometimes, a teacher might have a lot of information, and they need you to understand a whole lot of information. And so what do? They get up and they lecture on a lot of information, because if you go back and forth, they can't get through as much information. If they have a small amount of information, if they have some kind of question or thought and they want to kind of do it, I might say, didactically, back and forth, you ask questions, they say, they can teach in a lot of different ways. But one of them is preaching. And all of us do it, though. This is the thing is, we all preach something. Why did I put a vest on today? Do you think I considered how I looked today? Do you think I considered what I look like to other people today? Now I'm wondering, did all of you consider what you look like for other people today? Do you consider what you look like for me? Probably not. But we all put out messages. We all proclaim stuff. Sometimes we do it pretty subtly without thinking about it. Why do we choose certain types of clothes? Why do we do certain things with our hair, if we have it still? Why do we choose that? What message do we send with what we wear and how we do things? There is a message. It might be, I don't care what you think. Sounds like somebody who's been there.
Okay, I'm approving.
We've all been there probably at some point or another, wearing something that we knew might other people might not like, but we didn't care. And we purposely might have chosen something that would have got a rise from other people. Because we were sending a message, I don't care what you think. Which is kind of ironic because you're really saying, I seem to care what you think. But because when you really don't care what people think, then you don't really think about it. But we have messages all the time. And we actually proclaim them in a lot of different ways. And I want to look at a few of them today because I want you to consider them. I don't think I have control. AV room. They're all talking in there. I'm doing some little training. Can you guys hear me back there? I haven't had any control. Hold on. Let me see if something's going on with the mic itself. So I should have control, you're saying? Okay. Let's try something else. I'll change batteries and see if that does something. I haven't been up here in a bit, have I? Okay, let's see if this works. All right, let's see if that works. Okay. So have you considered the content of your wordless message? You going to take it from me?
I'm going to change your battery.
I already changed the battery.
You have fresh battery?
I put a new battery in. That's why it worked. So have you considered the content of your wordless message? Because that's the thing is, all of us have messages, and we all proclaim something. And much of it, in fact, it's been a while since I looked. Some of the statistics about communication is that more than 50% of communication is nonverbal. That, and it depends on situations and things, how much is nonverbal in different ways, but a lot of communication is nonverbal. One of the reasons why communicating with masks in the last year is problematic. Because especially for people, a lot of people who kind of pretended they didn't have hearing problems really realized they had hearing problems when they didn't understand what people were saying because they couldn't see their mouth move. And they realized I needed to watch their mouth move in order to really understand what they were saying. It's like, wow, my ears are not working as good as I thought they were. And then just facial expression. One of the reasons that masks have been especially difficult for young people is because they often don't get cues, especially the younger they are, the more they need the cues of the face to know whether you're saying that in a happy way or an upset way. And without seeing those cues, they might misunderstand the message. And so a lot of it is nonverbal, and we send out lots of messages, and we proclaim messages nonverbally all the time. And the question is, have we really considered the message we're preaching? Sometimes we have, as I said. Sometimes we have decided we're going to wear something specifically for a purpose. We're going to, you know, have a message with what we wear. Sometimes the message is, I didn't think about it. You know, but I want you to think of three things about the nonverbal message and the power of them. And we're going to look at three of them. I wanted to kind of separate them, but the particular path thing I used today, put them all together. So we're going to look at 1 Peter 3. It said, likewise, wives, be subject to your own husbands, so that even if some do not obey the word, they may be won without a word by the conduct of their wives. Now, this idea of being one is the same one that Paul uses quite a bit about the preaching of the gospel, of trying to win souls for God. Because we're in a battle, and we don't want them to be destroyed or to fall. We want to win them. So the urging here is for wives to try to win the battle without words and do it with your behavior. Now, when it comes down to in verse 7, likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way. I also believe, he doesn't go into the husbands quite as much here, but I think are husbands never in a position where their wives might need to be won? or is it not as just as important for husbands' behavior to win their wives for God and the gospel just as much? And I think we understand that it's not. We might see women who are devoted followers of Christ with husbands who aren't. We might see that more often, but I don't think it's only that way. And so it's very important for husbands to understand likewise that they live with their wife with understanding, honor, and realizing that they are a fellow heir of the grace of life. That all of those things are important for husbands to live. It's not that important to say them. It's more important that we live them. We do them. Because these things aren't, and this is like the John 13 message. When we look at that, I think you'll see that. That the message that Jesus preached there was very important that he showed them and did it and didn't just say it. Because a lot of messages we just say, but we don't follow up with doing. And think about this passage in 1 Corinthians 9. Paul himself, he said, though I am free from all, I'm just talking about all people, he's not enslaved to anybody is his point here in this passage. He's not obligated in terms of some slave mode. We only are obligated to God to follow him if we have made that choice. But he says, I'm free from all, but I have made myself a servant to all that I might win more of them. Now we know Paul preached a lot. We know Paul taught a lot. But Paul also, and I didn't go to all the passages, but you can look at Acts chapter 20 where he talks to the Ephesian elders and he talks about having done some things to show them and teach them things. He practiced things to help them understand stuff. To the church at Corinth, he had purposely worked with his own hands to provide for himself and his own, you know, those people with him, so that to give them and send them a message that he didn't teach in the moment. He didn't just do it one day. He actually spent like a year and a half in Corinth. And apparently for that entire year and a half, even though he could have taken money from them and not worked a job, that he worked a job. Making tents every day. Part of that making tents, he teaches them later, especially in 2 Corinthians, was to help them learn something. And much of what Paul did, he did to help people learn something. And so he says, to the Jews, I became as a Jew in order to win Jews. So even though he understood his freedom in Christ had removed the burden of the law from him, He went to the Jews. He lived like a Jew. Now, he would have been comfortable with that, right? He'd grown up that way. And he did that. And he did that to demonstrate and teach a message. And then he says, to those under law, became as one under the law, though not myself being under the law, that I might win those under the law. Now, I don't know why he differentiates the Jew from those under the law. You would think they're the same. But he might be specifically talking about Jews who are still following the Old Testament and not Christians. Because we know he also made a distinction even when he went to Jerusalem. And James is like, hey, you know, the brethren here have heard a lot of stuff about you. You really need to kind of offer some things at the temple. Well, James apparently is talking about the Christian Jews who have heard a lot of stuff about Paul and saying you might have a little work to do with your Jewish brothers in here. And so he might be distinguishing between Jews who were Christians and Jews who weren't Christians. But he's making that point. He's like, whether they're a Jewish brother, whether they're a Jewish and they're still following the law of Moses, I'm going to fit with them. I am going to live in such a way to fit in. And so, and he says that I might win those under the law. He was doing it for a purpose. He had thought about it. He had a message behind it. And he had a goal with the message. And he also said, to those outside the law, I became as one outside the law. Not being outside the law of God, but under the law of Christ. He goes, so when I went out to the Gentiles, he's telling us, I interacted with the Gentiles like I was a Gentile. And he goes, I'm not really like the Gentiles. I'm under the law of Christ. But I didn't practice. I didn't bring all of my Jewish traditions and family rules and law, you know, customs and bind them on them and say, I know I can't eat with you. I can't be at sit at the same table with you. He gave all that up and he would interact with them like he was one of them because he understood he is one of them because God has opened up the gospel so that all people, like the book of Ephesians, especially in chapter 2, talks about that what Jesus did was he tore down the wall that separated Jew and Gentile to unite us into one so that he could then take this all of humankind and present us to God. Paul understood all of that because he was a Christian. The Jews didn't understand it. Gentiles didn't understand it. A lot of people don't understand it. They kind of push their own traditions and their own history and their own culture more as more important than other cultures rather than God being the God of all of us, regardless of our nation or our background or our culture. And so he says that I wanted to win them as well. And he says, to the weak, I became weak, that I might win the weak. I become all things to all people, that by all means I might save some. Now, from a psychological perspective, some people kind of naturally do this. They try to fit in. The problem sometimes for people who just try to fit in everywhere and try to, they kind of like a chameleon, and just kind of try to pretend they are whatever, wherever they're at, is very often they're doing that from a place of, I'm hoping people will like me. I'm hoping people will accept me because I don't feel very good about myself and I'm hoping you'll like me. That's not a very good psychological place to be, by the way. And he's not teaching that. Because you might get the impression that that's what you should do, that you should fit in with everybody because, oh, then maybe they'll like you. That wasn't his goal. A lot of times people didn't like Paul, right? I mean, there's hardly another person in the New Testament who's disliked and attacked more than Paul. Because he wasn't that interested whether they liked him. He would try to fit in with them. He wouldn't challenge their culture, but his whole goal was to help them teach Christ. The reason they wouldn't like him is because they wouldn't like the message of Christ. And he was okay with that. So don't misunderstand. And it can be sometimes thought that way. And it's not necessarily a very healthy psychological place to be, to just kind of never know who you are and try to just fit in with everybody in that way. But if you understand fitting in as, you know, I'm comfortable with who I am and I don't mind fitting in with whatever the traditions are here or there, that's fine. And that's what Paul was doing. And he did it with a purpose. Because that was part of the wordless message Paul preached. Everywhere he went, Paul was preaching a message. He was preaching a message that he cared, that God cared, and that everybody was important to him. And he wanted them to learn things, even from his own life. I'll stop there for a moment because one of the things about this lesson, it's kind of a reminder for me. I actually, and I don't know if any of this fits for any of you. So when I was a young man, early 20s, you know, I became a Christian, I don't know, I was 22, 23, somewhere in there. And then in the first couple years, I was a member of a congregation in California, only about 7 years when I started preaching. But in the first couple of years, 2-3 years, we had done a lot of kind of preacher training stuff. There was a whole bunch of young people in the group. After a little while, there weren't a lot of young people when I first got there, but then it really began to expand and grow quite a bit. We had a lot of brand new babes in Christ in that congregation, and I became, in a very short window, like I was seasoned and wise and older than I really was, but I was older than them, and I was probably a little wiser than them. But a preacher came to me one time, I don't remember all the exact circumstances, but he was telling me, they're all watching you. And I hated what he was telling me. I really did. I'm like, they're all watching you. And he was urging me to set a really good example for all of them. And I'm like, I didn't want to set an example for everybody. I don't know how many of you here don't want to be the one everybody's looking at, and you're going to be responsible for what they do and don't do. Anybody here really up for that? You want to be the person who is going to be responsible for everybody else's behavior, and your life is going to be a message that they, and if you don't live it well, they're all going to fall? None of us like that, right? But the truth is, all of us are that. Your children will make choices based on your life. They will make judgments about the way you've behaved and the way you haven't behaved, and they will either agree or they will disagree. They might even hate it. They might grow up thinking you're one of the worst people ever. That's what children do. They make judgments about your behavior. Other people make judgments about your behavior. I was given a little bit before I was getting ready to preach. And Lowell Williams, I was down in California, and I was sitting with him at lunch one time and after a meeting, and some others, asking some questions, and asked him a question about when you know you're ready to go preach. And his answer was weird. It gave me a couple of weird answers. At the time, I thought they were weird. They were actually quite wise, but I didn't realize. And one of his first questions is, what job do you have? So we talked about my job a little bit. Didn't understand why he asked me about my job. Anyway, so he gave the answer to that. And then he asked about my wife. Now, I wasn't married, and I was engaged at the time. And he mentioned something about, it's like, well, do you think your wife can be a preacher's wife? I had never thought of it. Never even considered it. Funny, because the woman I was engaged to at the time, she thought she lived in a fishbowl being a member of a congregation. Being a preacher's wife is like increasing that by 100. Everybody has a judgment about how you behave. You might think that's true about as a member of a congregation. It is times 10 for a preacher's wife, preacher's kids. It shouldn't be that way, but it is. And so you kind of have to understand sometimes things that come with the thing, and can they handle it? He asked, do you think they can handle it? What was interesting is, before that engagement was called off, I had come to the, in my own sense was, I'm probably not going to preach. I didn't call off engagement, by the way. She did, but I decided I probably wouldn't go preach because I didn't think she could handle it. I thought it would be really way too much for her. Now, should I have asked her? Maybe. It's just that was my judgment I made at the time, and I decided I wasn't going to preach. She called it off. I finally started after a little while going, okay, I'm going to go preach. And at that point, before I met Julie, it was, I'm only going to marry somebody if she can be a preacher's wife. Now, I didn't tell her that. She didn't know that ahead of time, but that was part of the standard of me marrying somebody. If she couldn't have handled that, I wouldn't have been married to her. I was fully prepared to not be married, to never marry. And so that was my choice. And so, but I realized that. And so Julie, one of the first times after she met me, she actually went to a church where she was attending and actually talked to the preacher's wife and asked about what that was like, you know. So she got kind of a message early on. But I've known about this since I was, you know, in my mid-20s. I hated it. I hated being told about it. And I didn't even believe him when he first told me that they're watching you and they are learning from you. And I'm like, I don't think they care. There are a bunch of other young guys. They're, you know, 20 years old, 18 years old. One of them came to me a year later, asked to have lunch. We'd kind of gotten separated from different reasons. And he talked with me and talked about how important I had been in his life. So the preacher ended up being right. But I didn't believe. Now I hated it. And I'm sure some of you hate it. You don't like the fact that other people look at you and they hear messages from you. And you're responsible for that message that you send in your life. But that's also found in Scripture. Timothy is told that about being careful about his example, you know. And it isn't just, obviously it's for those who are teachers, like James talked about teachers. Be careful being a teacher, right? Why do you have to be careful being a teacher? In any kind of form. Whatever way, what happens to teachers? Don't you make judgments about teachers? All the time? You like them, don't like them? You think they're good, not good? Do you think they're hypocrites or not hypocrites? All those judgments get made of teachers all the time. And so you have to be careful of being a teacher. Because you're going to fall into that place where others are going to be looking at you, judging you. And so that whole message was an early one to me. And recently, I was been reminded, part of the reasons I did this, I was able to put this lesson in my mind together last week during Ben's lesson, not that I wasn't hearing and listening to it, but that I had already been thinking about it. I had been reminded recently quite a bit from some people in our family about what I'm doing to kind of care for Julie and in her failing health and dementia, the challenges that I'm going through, that somebody talked about, you know, the message that I'm preaching. I don't love hearing it. I hate hearing it. Sometimes I'd rather get up on the table and scream and yell rather than think about how I look to others. But the truth is, people make judgments. And I'm in that spot. And I'm in that spot maybe even more so, more publicly, more visibly, because I'm the preacher and an elder here. But it's people, she's like, family has told me, your neighbors are going to hear that message preached. People around you are going to hear that message preached. And they kind of had to come back to that realization. Yeah, that's true. People are hearing the message you preach. Whether you go to church, don't go to church, whether you come to church and rush out, whether you come to church and talk, all those little things that you do all have a message that other people see. And so you think about in John chapter 13, when Jesus himself washed the disciples' feet. Do you think he could have just told them a proverb? You need to wash each other's feet. And that would have sufficed. Do you think that message would have been enough? If he had never gotten down. What's interesting in this whole passage, he says, before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart from that of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. During supper, when the devil had already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he had come from God and was going back to God. So these are all the things God knows. That they're eating their Passover meal together. And so he rose from supper. He doesn't say anything, which is really important here. He laid aside his outer garment, so whatever he was wearing, he kind of set that down. Then he took a towel, and he says, he tied it around his waist. Then he poured water into a basin, and he went, and he says, began to wash the disciples' feet. I don't know which disciple he sat down in front of first and just like took the water and started washing their feet. Wasn't Peter, obviously, because we realized during the thing that Peter's the only one who speaks up. But I suspect that all of the disciples are a little bit curious what he's doing. He's like sitting there. He's your Lord. I don't know if you guys have been, if you like watching Downton Abbey. So over the last week or so, I've watched kind of Downton Abbey all six seasons with Julie. And again, for, you know, second or third time, whatever. And do you think, if for those who have seen it, do you think the butler Carson would have been comfortable if Lord Crawley had gotten down and washed his feet? No. And that's just, this is like a fairly low level, you know, aristocrat in England. People are often very uncomfortable with, like, if your boss came in and started washing your feet, you'd be thinking that's weird, right? I'm assuming you'd think that's weird. I don't know where, if you don't think it's weird, I don't know where you work. But when Jesus started washing their feet, I assume all the disciples were kind of like, not quite certain what's happening here. And so, I don't know whose feet he's washed first, but he's washing their feet, wrapped, you know, with the towel, and drying them with the towel. And he came to Simon Peter, and you know, who said to him, "Lord, do you wash my feet?" So Peter is having the response that a lot of people would have, but he's saying it out loud. Now, I don't know if Peter thinks that, you know, he's better than the other guys. Well, you know, they're not willing to say something. They're not willing to stop him, and he's willing to. I don't know why he's willing to speak up when the others don't, but he does. And Jesus says, "What I'm doing, you do not understand now, but afterward you will understand." And then, you know, and then he's like, "You know, you will never wash my feet." Because Peter's thinking, I'm not going to lower you to the place of a slave. No, you're my Lord. And Jesus is like, you know, hey, if I don't wash you, you don't have any part with me. Oh, then wash my whole body. He's like, Peter's missing the point, which is pretty common for Peter, that he misses the point, he speaks up. But I actually think a lot of the disciples miss the point. He's like that guy, and he's like that student in school who's always talking and says a lot of the stuff the other students are unwilling to talk, say, would like to say, but they're afraid to say, and that one person's kind of not too worried about looking like a fool, and they, you know, make all those mistakes and say all that stupid stuff. That's Peter. So I assume a lot of the other guys are in the same boat, and they're learning just like he was. But he's like, hey, wash all of me. I don't need to wash all of you. I'm just washing your feet. There's a lesson here. You just need to sit and listen to the lesson. But the lesson was in what he did. It wouldn't have had the same impact on Peter if he had just... Would Peter have reacted this way had he simply said, you need to wash one another's feet? No. He'd go, oh, okay, that's a good lesson. And if he said, okay, I mean that in a very non-literal way. You could do it literally if they need that. But whatever they need, you know, widows and orphans, true religion, visit them in their needs, whatever they need, do that for them. You know, care for my sheep, as he told Peter later on after he resurrected. You know, love them. I need you to tend them and care for them. Do these things for them. And that's what he was teaching them here, that you're not too good to get down on your hands and knees and wipe the dirt and grime and sweat from somebody's toes. You're never going to be too good for that if Jesus wasn't. And that message, what's important about this message is it can't be simply your thought and intention that's good. Right? You either do it or don't do it. When you're serving and you're helping and you're visiting, or you're, it's one thing to have great thoughts and intentions, but they don't actually get things done, do they? It's nice to have thoughts and intentions. It's nice. Yeah, and God tells us, Hebrews 4, that his word cuts us and discerns the thoughts and intentions of our heart. And that's a good thing. I'm glad that God is interested in what our intentions are. And he's glad when our intentions are good. But our intentions have to be followed up by what we actually do. Because what we do is the message, the wordless message we preach. And what we do is what's important. The thoughts and intentions and have to be followed up with actually doing it. What's the message? If you think, hey, this would be good, like Jesus talks about when he says, you know, don't be that person who says, oh, be warm and be filled, but doesn't give them anything, any food. Well, John writes about this, but he says, what help is that to that person? Oh, be warm and filled. You ever had that? Oh, you're in my, people say you're in my thoughts and prayers. But do you actually, you know, I could use something. Could take, use some help. Do you do the help? Oh, no. From home. From the comfort of my recliner. You're in my thoughts and prayers. That's not sometimes enough. If we don't do, if our hands are not actually actively helping and serving, the thoughts and the prayers aren't enough. The wordless message we proclaim to the world, I think we ought to just consider. And I'm preaching to myself too. I'm realizing what I'm going through with Julie, I've realized that I often have fallen short for helping other people in places when they could have used help and I didn't really understand it. And I understand it better now. But I didn't know it. I know things now I didn't know before. And so I'm preaching to me too. And we have to actually follow up the thoughts and the prayers with what can I do? Well, how can I serve? How can I help? Because that's whom he called us to be, right? Not just people who sit in comfort having good thoughts and prayers, but to be people who are willing to get down on our knees, whether in prayer or in service to others. So we're going to end there. Appreciate it. Went a little longer, gave you a little bit of a digression there about my having learned this lesson long ago in my own life and then learning it again recently. But we're going to sing a song just to close out, and we'll have it up here on the screen, but 88 in the supplements. If you need help, we say it all the time that we don't want anybody who is here or visits or is at home watching to be in need and not reach out if we don't know. We try to help and we want to help, and sometimes we don't always know who needs help. And so unless we understand that you need help or could use some help, we don't always know what to do. And if you're here today and you have thoughts or you have things you need and help in any way, we want to help. Please reach out to us, contact us, grab us, take us aside, do whatever to get our attention. We will help in any way we're able. We're going to go ahead and sing tonight's song, or today's song. So let's go ahead and stand.